And welcome back to AA Opera Podcast, episode 103. 103.
Yay!
103.
Here we are with 103. And oh, what an episode it is going to be today. But first of all, Avi, how are you?
I'm good. I am in America.
Yay!
Having a lovely time, spending time with just my mom and my grandmother. And yeah, it's been very nice. I went to get my nails done yesterday for the first time in like months. And I'm really, really happy with what I got. I did have a very chatty Kathy sitting next to me on the plane here. Heard all about her life story.
Chatty Kathy, I've never heard of that before.
Chatty Kathy, that's a great one. Yeah, she chatted with me all about her daughter and her granddaughter and her daughter's partner.
Wow.
And the trip that she was going on. She was from the Northwest and she was very excited to be going somewhere. She had just been to India to see the tigers.
Amazing.
I got a lot of information.
We need to get Kathy on the podcast. Uh-huh. Tell us about her travels.
Oh yeah, she asked me, what do I do? So I said, I'm an opera singer. And she goes, oh my goodness, I love opera. And I was like, oh yeah, that's the one of the, yeah. Thank you. I'm so like, yeah, I love opera too. It's just a really funny conversation. And then, and I wanted to tell you that yesterday I finally watched the new West Side Story.
Yeah. Oh, what did you think?
I loved it. I thought it was really, really well done. It felt like such an old timey movie as well. Like they filmed it like an olden time movie. Like the shots were like long and you could see all the dancing and I was just like, oh, and the singing was really good actually.
Yeah, I thought that too. I thought the slight twists and modernizations, the choices were really subtle and really classy, I thought. So yeah, big fan.
Big fan. And also what I found out is the guy who plays Tony, who was also in The Fault in Our Stars, his mom's an opera director. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. So I thought that was a nice fun fact and I really enjoyed it. But what about you? How was your week?
Well, yeah, it's been good. Over here it's the Easter holidays and they get 2 weeks off. So yeah, I've been taking some time off, which has been nice. I'm just staying in London and we've had a few visitors along the way. Obviously last episode we're looking after Daisy. My Mum came back from our holiday and we spent some time together, which was nice. Feeling good. And our springtime weather in London is coming. It's a bit stormy today, but we've had a nice bank holiday, so it's been good.
Yeah, the weather here was cold for the last couple of days, and then it's meant to be a heat wave this weekend, so that'll be fun.
Well, I'll be jealous of that. But should we move swiftly on?
We shall move swiftly on.
Episode.
Yes, very excited for this week's episode. This week we have the incredible tenor who has been one of a kind ever since he made his very first debut. It is Freddie De Tomaso, and he's here to talk to us all about his career.
Yeah, we hope you enjoy it, guys. It's a fabulous episode. Enjoy.
Freddie, and welcome to AA Opera Podcast. We are so excited you're here. Can we start off by having you introduce yourself to our audience?
Yes, certainly. Hello, I'm Freddie De Tomaso. I'm a tenor. I grew up in England, but I've got I'm half English and half Italian. But I've lived in England all my life, and I studied in London at the Royal Academy of Music, and then I went to the studio of the Bayerische Staatsoper, where I studied kind of, you know, a young artist program for a year before starting my career in the 2019-20 season.
And what an exciting career it's been so far, it must be said. But let's go way back first, and we'd like to ask what your first experience of opera was.
Yeah, so my mum was, well, in fact, both my parents were very interested in opera and classical music. And my mum took me to Glyndebourne which wasn't very far away from where we lived. She took me to Glyndebourne to see a double bill of The Miserly Knight of Rachmaninoff, quite an unusual piece, I think, and Gianni Schicchi. And that was when I was about 11. That was my first experience of live opera anyway. I'd heard, obviously, on the radio, my parents played classical music a lot in the car, and my dad had a restaurant. He played it in the on the sound system and that sort of thing.
Did that kind of incite opera into your life, or not really?
A little bit. I mean, so it certainly made it like a background theme. Obviously, you know, something's being played a lot when you're a child, it kind of goes in almost subconsciously anyway. So I think, that kind of was in the background of my mind, maybe.
Cool.
Mm. So... actually, before going to conservatoire,
yeah,
you studied languages at Bristol University.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So what made you decide to go study languages first? And then why did you end up dropping out?
So when I was at school, music and singing was something I did, but just kind of on the side as a hobby, like in the same way as playing sports, like it was just another extracurricular activity, which I had no thought of doing kind of at a professional level, really. So singing and you know, I sang in the chapel choir and I had singing lessons, but it was just a kind of side game. At my school, you know, it was expected really that you went to university after school and you needed to choose a course, and went and had one of those meetings with the career advisement officer or whatever they were called, and they said, yeah, languages makes you very employable, go and do that. Said, okay, fine. So I went and did a language degree, or started a languages degree at Bristol. But then after, kind of in the middle of my second year, I kind of realised that it wasn't really what I wanted to do, and I'd kind of just gone down that path because I thought I had to. And so decided to leave and go back home and kind of reevaluate, see what was going on.
Yeah, good decision in the end.
Mm, yeah. A lot of my friends have said to me in the past, they've said, like, my girlfriend, like, imagine if you just stuck it out, if you just stuck it out at uni and persisted there, and then, you know, your life would be completely different. And I think that is true.
It's funny because I assumed, definitely, when I saw that you studied languages, I was thinking, oh, maybe that's a smart decision that you made, thinking, oh, I want to be a singer, so languages is going to come into my day-to-day.
Complete chance.
But helpful.
Yeah, certainly helpful, because the languages that on my degree that I was doing were French and Italian, so handy.
Yeah,
very handy for a spinto tenor.
Yeah.
So what was it really that was the catalyst for you making that decision, like, I want to pursue singing?
When I'd come home from uni, and I was kind of not entirely sure what I was going to do. I was working in our restaurant, and I remember saying to my mum, actually, I was like, oh, I'd quite like to go and see my old singing teacher, the guy that had taught me at school, just because I hadn't sung for basically 2 years and I'd missed it, realised, and I thought, okay, let's go and see him. So I went and had a couple of lessons with him, and he, very long, kind of convoluted story short, he said that my voice had got much better and had kind of developed a lot, and that I should go and sing to some people in London. I went to sing to a coach at Glyndebourne, actually, first, who then recommended me to go and sing to the head of singing of the Royal Academy of Music in London, this chap, Mark Wildman, who ended up becoming my singing teacher. And still to this day, it's my singing teacher. He's literally just left Milan now. He was here for the last week of production.
Ah, that's so great. Nice.
So did Mark then really say, come to Academy?
Yeah, literally. So I remember I went up to London with my mum for an audition, essentially. And I barely sang, actually. I only sang a few phrases. I think he heard all he needed to hear, and he said, he's kind of, well, what are you doing with your life now? And I explained the whole kind of leaving university and being a bit unsure and whatever. And he said, well, I think you should, like, start here on Monday, basically.
Wow.
And it was a Thursday, I remember. It was a Thursday. He said, start on Monday. Because it was like inset week, like week zero then, so term hadn't quite started. And so I was like, oh, yeah, okay, fine.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't really know what would happen or what would come of it, but I thought, yeah, fine, okay, let's do that. So I started on Monday as a baritone. I started the first 2 years sang as a baritone.
Isn't that the dream?
Yeah, I'm just trying to imagine it being like, okay, because I assume did you move from home into central London to study, or did you travel?
No, actually, so for that first year, because I live in Tunbridge Wells, which is, it's only about 55 minutes into London on the train. So I just went up and down for that first year on the train, kind of commuted in and out, which was fine. And then second year onwards, then I lived up in town with some mates.
I wish that was my experience of auditioning for Academy, because I had to like wait since I found out in December, and then I just had to sit and wait.
Yeah, yeah.
Until August.
Yeah.
I was just like, wait, what now? What now? It's so different. Currently, you have two albums out.
Mm-hmm.
What were the different choices you made when putting together the repertoire for each of these?
So the repertoire on Passione was the thinking behind it. Obviously, it's not opera, it's Italian and Neapolitan songs. The thinking behind that was that obviously when we recorded that and released it, I mean, I'm still early in my career, but that was really early, really, really super early. And so I quite like the idea of just doing something slightly different, because you see so often in the last 50 years, every tenor's first album has basically got the same 12 arias on. And it's a bit kind of, you know, it's repetitive and it's not particularly personal. Also, I quite like to sing stuff in recording. Now I realise as I go on, it's nice to sing things in recording which you've sung in the stage, you know, the actual, and I hadn't sung many roles, certainly many leading roles at all. So I thought, well, let's sing the repertoire which I sang so much as I studied, essentially, whilst I was at Academy and in Munich, and that was all these Italian and Neapolitan songs.
Stepping into that recording process, I guess, like, how did you find that whole experience? I imagine it would have been quite different. Was it different, or was it similar to performing on the stage?
It's really different. It's very stressful. The first time, I mean, I'm more relaxed with it now, but I remember the first time, it's hard because you want to give your best, but you're so aware that when that little red light is on, and you're thinking, well, it has to be perfect. So you want to keep giving another go and another go. And obviously, like, when you're in the recording process with the orchestra, they do a couple of kind of rehearsal takes first, which you're there. And I've learned now that in those rehearsal takes, maybe you sing a phrase or two or try one or two things, but you do not sing the whole aria or the whole song. And it's, to begin with, it was quite hard not to do that. Also, because you're excited, you're like, "Oh my god, wow! This is, you know, incredible experience." You want to sing, but it's a mind battle recording, I would say.
So then, what were the choices that you made for Il Tenore?
Il Tenore then was the opera, the arias and duets from the operas which I had sung most until at that point. So obviously Tosca I did. My debut in the Bolshoi, and then in Covent Garden. So that was that. Butterfly, I sang new production of Butterfly in Vienna, and the new production in Dresden, and then in Covent Garden, so lots of Butterfly. Carmen as well. I made my debut in the Vienna Staatsoper of Carmen, and I love that duet at the end of Carmen. All that live final scene is just so good. I think it's one of the best kind of little 15 odd minutes of opera. It's so exciting, so dramatic, so good to sing. And then Turandot, obviously I've not sung Calaf yet, but Non Piangere Lui is essentially my favourite aria, and Nessun Dorma, you know,
it's Nessun Dorma. That's also something that not a lot of us in our generation can say anymore, is to be doing your debut at the Bolshoi. I feel like
That was a bit of a surprise, actually. It was obviously it was before the war and everything, and it was a COVID situation. Actually, a chap, the guy that was singing that was originally slated to sing Cabaret d'Orsay got like, I think he had long COVID or something. So they realized that he wasn't going to be ready or able to sing. So about a month before I had to go, they rang up and said, hey, can you come? And I said, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a great chance to try it out before, you know, making your debut of anything in Covent Garden is very scary. So if you have a chance to try it out beforehand, it's handy. So yeah.
And what was the Bolshoi like?
It was very cold. it was like November. Is it November? Yeah, Moscow in November is chilly. Yeah, that's my open. But it was amazing. Like, you know, that theatre is incredible. Like, it's, you know, hugely historic place. And no, it was great. It was a very interesting experience.
Fantastic. And we'd like to ask, what do you love most about performing opera, if you could summarize it?
Being an entertainer, I think, entertaining people, because that's our job ultimately as opera singers. We're, you know, the public come and they pay to be entertained, to hear the music. They're maybe some of their, you know, some of the most, in my opinion, the most beautiful music there is. And our job is to entertain them by singing that music as well as possible.
Good answer, really good answer. And it's like, it's a kind of answer where it just highlights that what we do is about the audience and the audience's response to it, rather than like what how it makes us feel. It's about the audience.
No, it's complete. Yeah, it might. Yeah, for me, it's about the audience and their and it's very satisfying. You know, if you're singing whatever you're singing, whether there's moments of like comedy or sadness or love, whatever, you can feel the energy from the audience. Certainly if you're doing it half well, you know, hopefully you're getting the reaction you want. And that's nice, because it gives you that little satisfaction to think, yes, okay, they're enjoying this. This is good. So that we're on kind of on the path together.
Which brings us quite nicely into the next question, which is, how would you like to shape opera moving forward? Like, how would you like to, the opera world to be looking like moving forward?
More of the same, really. I mean, the thing which is seeming to become more and more prevalent since the pandemic is the whole live streaming, live TV, cinema, whatever. And I'm not sure if that's, I mean, obviously it's good that it brings opera to a wider audience, but it is not the same. It's not the same as hearing it in the theatre, feeling the vibration of the orchestra or somebody's voice, like in your chest, as you can do, you know, when you're sitting in the theatre. So that's one little part of this industry going forward that I'm not completely convinced by. But otherwise, I mean, I'm a bit of a traditionalist, really, at heart. I love singing. The rep that I do in traditional productions, like, you know, this Zeffirelli that I'm doing at the moment in La Scala, it's perfect, in my opinion. Why would you ever change a production like this? It's just, in my opinion, it's just completely perfect.
You've kind of hinted at what your answer is to the next question, which is, there are so many amazing tenor arias out there, but if you had to pick a favourite, what would it be?
Yeah, I really love Non Piangere Liu. It's wonderful. And also, I really like singing Cielo e Mar from La Gioconda. That's a really fantastic aria. But yeah, as you say, there's so many. The tenor is, we're super lucky tenors, because we have probably by far the biggest choice of bangers. Yeah, I mean, there's so many, like all the Verdi, there's so much amazing Verdi, Verismo, you know, the light repertoire that I don't sing, but, you know, Rossini, Bellini, there's incredible stuff.
You said when you started out at RAM, you were a baritone. Let's go back to that for a second. And was the reason why you switched into tenor partly because you really liked the repertoire, or was that just like a vocal shift that you found fitted better?
No, it was a vocal shift. My teacher Mark, you know, when I was studying as a baritone, the beginning of each lesson, you know, would vocalize and do exercises, normally up to F sharp or sometimes G, kind of depending if it was a high day or not. And then one day And he said, oh, that sound, you know, that's feeling in good voice. I was like, yeah. So he's like, okay, we'll try this. And went up semitone A flat. And I did the arpeggio and then again to A natural and then B flat and then B natural and then C natural. And the high C, like, I remember I like completely cracked down the middle, like completely. But then he said, hey, would you try that again. And I did it again and I was able to hold it a little bit more and then it cracked again. And then I remember him just saying, okay, well, we've got some things to think about there. And I think that lesson must have been on a Thursday or a Friday. He said, well, let's see after the weekend. And I think obviously he went away and had a good think over the weekend. And I don't think I thought much about it at all over that weekend. But then when I came back, we tried singing some tenor repertoire, some Handel and some Mozart. And did some other exercises, kind of, you know, where seeing where how the voice was in like a tenor tessitura, tenor passaggio kind of area. And then, yeah, after a few weeks, we decided that I would then start to study as a tenor. Yeah.
I feel like that's also, it's like for you, you're sitting there going, huh, all right, okay.
Yeah.
That's an identity change.
Yeah, big time. Big time. And the next 2 years which followed, there were some moments of, yeah, this is amazing, and other moments where I just want to smash my head on the wall.
Yeah.
You know? Sometimes it wouldn't work the way I wanted it to work.
Yeah. I did the transition from soprano to mezzo, and it's one of those things where everyone's like, huh. I remember the first teacher that said that to me was like, it's going to really upset you. I'm like, can I still be a singer? Can I still be an opera singer?
I feel like when you do it...
It's like, it's going to be an identity change.
Yeah. I feel like when you do it at music college as well, because you go into those song classes and things and sing in front of all your friends, and then suddenly you're singing tenor rep instead of baritone rep. It's kind of like, it feels a little bit like there's all eyes on you a little bit, I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, massively. Yeah. Yeah, enormously. Yeah, but I'm happy with the choice.
Yeah, again, it's one of those, imagine if you didn't, then would you be where, you know, doing what you're doing right now?
Yeah, quite. Yeah.
So you rose to fame quite quickly. How did that success impact your life and outlook of the career?
Well, it impacted my life in the sense that it kind of put a turbo charge on everything, because so when I won Vinyas, you know, when you win a big international competition like that, along with the prize comes lots of offers of work and that sort of thing, and I it was all suddenly kind of intense. I mean, at that point I didn't have an agent or anything. I had gone to Vinyas kind of on a whim because I hadn't been cast in the Academy's opera for that term and I had nothing to do, so I literally just went along. You know, because I was aware that I was much younger than most of the other contestants. I was 23. And, you know, most of the people that I had seen were singing there were kind of late 20s, even 30 odd. And I was still an undergrad at college. So I wasn't expecting to suddenly have all this work offer and stuff kind of come. So I had to make some decisions about what to do. I decided obviously to go to Munich and have a year in a studio to kind of learn more about being in an opera house and at that level, because I don't think you can really go from being at school essentially in a conservatoire suddenly to singing main roles in like European houses. Like, that's, you need something in between to kind of give you some understanding of how it all works. So that's why I did that.
And how did that change your outlook of the career?
It didn't really. It didn't change my outlook of the career. I mean, I felt very lucky. I knew I was very lucky and that I was very happy to be doing what I was doing. But it didn't really change anything.
Did it impact your outlook though?
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When I had won, I thought, oh wow, okay, maybe it made me think, well, I've definitely made the right choice here, what I'm doing. Because I was still, you know, the whole way through undergrad, there was always a little bit of thought of, oh, maybe is this the right thing? Like, is, you know, because it's, you realize when you're studying how competitive the world of opera singing is. You know, classical world music is very competitive, obviously even more so for, you know, you see it for kind of the light lyric soprano has it really hard. Yeah, it's generally incredibly competitive. And so you're always wondering, am I good enough? Will I press that wave? But after winning, you know, one of the biggest competitions in the world, you think, okay, maybe I am. This is going to be okay.
You think like, okay, maybe I should give this a shot. Like, yeah, give it a go. Yeah, yeah. Give it at that point.
Yeah. But like the imposter syndrome that I felt in that couple of years, just enormous, truly. Even when I was there, I remember sitting in the prize announcement thing in Barcelona and thinking, this must be wrong. They must have just forgotten my name off the end of the list once they were getting down to kind of third, second, first. I was like, well, it's obviously not me. Yeah.
And it follows on nice onto the next question, which is, we wanted to ask what if you could give any advice to aspiring singers out there.
Listen to the great singers of the past. That would be a big one for me. Listen to all the old recordings, YouTube and Spotify and everything. Super useful. Listen, because they had closer links to the composers themselves. So they really know how it's meant to be, you know, like Caruso, who's somebody that, you know, I wish had more recording available, but in what he does have available, now he was singing. He debuted, literally like created the roles for example, the role that I sang in my debut in La Scala, Maurizio and Adriana Le Couvreur, he created that role with Chilea on the stage of La Scala when he was 27 years old. So listening to his recording of the kind of the little aria in the fourth act, you know that's exactly how it's meant to be, because Chilea was playing the piano. So that I'd say that, and then also kind of in a more practical bit of advice is do competitions. Competitions are so good because all you sing to such huge panels, you know, these big international competitions. Once you get to like the semi-final, the panel can be like 15 of the most influential people in the opera world. And so every time you do one of those competitions, you're essentially kind of auditioning and showing yourself how you've improved. You're basically giving out your CD again and being like, hey, remember me? Like, this is where I'm at now. And a lot of people watch those competitions, you know, especially now that, you know, with online social media, the word goes around quickly about who's in the semis or in the finals or whatever. Yeah. So that those would be my two little bits of advice.
I think that's really good advice, especially about the competitions, because talking from experience here, I don't think it's necessarily pushed at conservatoire how important the competitions are. Like, yes, there's competitions happening around, but from my experience anyway, it was quite blasé, like, oh yes, you know, enter this competition, that competition, if you want to. But it wasn't like pushed as a really good thing to do. Really good advice to...
Yeah, it was more about the in-house competitions that we should do. But not necessarily external stuff.
In-house stuff is great because obviously, you know, it gives you a chance to try out singing repertoire in a stressed situation with a panel, an audience, whatever. And obviously, you know, that potentially chance to like win, you know, win some money or whatever. But yeah, the big ones, the international ones, and they're essentially how you give out your calling cards.
So what's next for you?
So I have, how many have I done? Two. I've got six more performances of La Bohème here in La Scala. And then I will go to, what am I doing? I've got a recital in Peralada in Spain, like an Easter-themed recital, which I'm looking forward to, with Audrey Sanchez, who will play with me on the piano. And then I go to the Schauspielhaus Berlin for Rosenkavalier and Traviata. Kind of, I'm there for a couple of months.
Yeah, you're very busy. Actually, it just leads to one quick extra question. Being on the road and having a busy schedule, like, how do you find, like, learning the repertoire, like on the go? Do you feel like at this point you've got it all in the bag, or are you like rehearsing for this Easter concert whilst you've got these performances at Bohem?
A lot of the repertoire I've kind of got kind of 4/5 learnt already, kind of in the back of my mind. And then, yeah, it can be a case of, you know, if you're in a theatre working on one thing, if there's a coach there that you get on well with, you can, you know, work on, kind of have coachings essentially on the days off or whatever for the repertoire that you've got next. Like, that's what I did. For example, like when I was going to make my debut of Riccardo in Un ballo in maschera, whilst I was in Vienna singing whatever it was, I coached Un ballo in maschera whilst I was singing the other thing, because that you know, I had a coach in Vienna who I you know, really like. It's an Italian guy who's very good. So
thanks for that. And
pleasure.
Just as we round off, where can people follow you online to keep up to date with your latest adventures?
Instagram is a good one. It's just my name. Twitter also, again, it's just my name. And then I have websites as well, which is freddydetamassa.com. It's on there for schedule and info, that kind of thing.
Great. We'll make sure that we link all of that below.
That's amazing. Thank you.
In the description. But thank you so, so much for joining us today, Freddie.
Pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So this week's question is, if you could have dinner with any opera singer, dead or alive, who would it be?
I really would love to have dinner with Flagstadt or Birgit Nielsen. I feel like the two of those would be really interesting. But I would also really like someone like a Caruso or a...
Yes.
You know, like one of those very old-timey big tenors that I want to see what tenors were like 100 years ago. What about you?
Well, Pavarotti is who came to my mind because I have watched a lot of, you know, documentaries on him. I think he had such a fascinating life that I would want to like sit down, give the man a hearty portion of spaghetti bolognese and, and yeah, just speak with probably one of the biggest names that there ever will be in opera. Yeah.
I just want to be invited to one of his like post-show dinner parties that were so talked about.
Yeah.
I like how neither of us picked someone who was alive and actually were capable of having dinner with.
I think it's probably because it's always there that they could just get them on the podcast. Whereas like, you know, having dinner with somebody, then it's got to be someone from the golden age of opera singers, I think. Yeah.
Great question. I really like that one. Thank you so much to Freddie for being here and talking to us on the podcast. We love getting to know him. You can catch him pretty much anywhere at any time. You just got to follow along to see where he's going.
Yeah, absolutely. And make sure that you are following us on socials. We are AA Opera everywhere. And be sure to go and check out all of the other episodes of season 7 so far. We are nearing the end. We haven't even mentioned that yet. But we have so many amazing episodes from this season through all the way back to 2019. So go catch them and subscribe and rate this podcast. That would really help us out.
As Ashley mentioned, we are nearing the end of season 7. Next week, big gulp, I cannot believe that it is the end of season 7. It has been a tremendous season, and if you enjoyed the season or the episodes, please make sure to subscribe to our podcast, and you can also help us out to make sure that season 8 comes around by buying us a coffee. The link is in our bio.
And that's all for this week, guys. We hope to see you next week for the season finale. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye. It's a good one.